This is a production of the ZTalk Radio Network. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Wow. It's dark. Well, let's have some light on the subject.
Put on your critical thinking caps and please refrain from hugging. It's time for Dimland Radio with your host, Jim Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons.
Hello and welcome to Dimland Radio here on the ZTalk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. Remember, I'm not really a doctor. I just play doctor online. This show is kind of starts on sort of a sad note. It's not a terribly sad note because, well, I'll get into it. It's sad in that the world of skepticism, and you know, this show has been, you know, predicated on the idea that I'm a skeptic, and we're on this internet radio station called ZTalk Radio that is primarily pro-paranormal, and I'm the thorn in the side. I stick out like a sore thumb. I'm the red-headed stepchild. I come on and don't believe a lot of the claims on here. And let me tell you something, kids. I don't catch any of the new shows that are on now. I'm sorry. But back in the day, I used to catch a lot more of them. I just had more time, I guess. And when I get into the chat room on a Saturday night before my show airs at 11 p.m. Central, just after 11 p.m. Central, and when I'm getting things prepared, I'll put on whatever the audio is happening. Quite often it's a past show of mine that's on, or it could be Big Picture Science, which follows Dimland Radio every week. Two episodes of Big Picture Science follows after I finish my blathering for an hour and so, or an hour, whatever works out to be. But sometimes I hear some of the old shows. They get rotated through. There was a show on ZTalk sometime back called The Man Who Talks to Angels. Some guy named Ronald something. For me, I couldn't listen to that show. I couldn't. I mean, the host, there's two hosts. There's this fellow and a gal, and you know her name because her name is Robin, and because he would say the name Robin every chance he got. Well, Robin, and he talked like that too. Well, Robin, on this show this week, Robin, that's such a great question, Robin. You know, it was not for me. And then what will happen on occasion when I get in on Saturday night into the chat room and just kind of getting things, make sure everything's set up, sometimes the server for ZTalk has gone askew, and I have to restart it. And when you restart it, it starts grabbing those old shows, and I'll skip through them. So, God, get to one of my shows. Get to one of the Big Picture Science so I can listen to it and not feel annoyed. And then there was an old UFO classified show on here, and you just listen to some of them, and it's just the incredulity of the shows was incredible. It was hard to believe. Just how gullible, I'm sorry, how unskeptical some of the old shows that I hear bits and pieces of now, even today, how just non-skeptical they were. They just wide-eyed accepted everything they were told. It's just like, okay, as long as it's against the standard model explanation of the world, they're down with it, even if it's contradictory, paranormal-type stuff, supernatural-type stuff. Even if it's contradictory, as long as it contradicts the the narrative, the main, you know, the reality, let's put it that way. As long as it contradicts that, it's fine. And anyway, so Dimland Radio doesn't always focus on the skeptical. I do say at the end of each show, be skeptical and extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, which is true. That's, you do need extraordinary evidence for those extraordinary claims. And maybe just my general dimness, whatever makes me Dr. Dim, has that skeptical feel to it, even when I'm not talking about something specifically skeptical. You know, skeptical. So, but tonight, as I started saying, this is a week that's kind of a sad week for the skeptical movement, for people that are interested in skepticism and critical thinking and science and all that. It's been a sad week. Not super sad, but sad. And why isn't it? Well, what happened? The amazing Randy, James Randy, died this past week. I believe it was on Tuesday. And according to the JREF, the James Randi Educational Foundation, the statement released from them said that he died from age-related causes. Well, he was 92 years old, so that's why, I mean, it's sad that he's gone, but he was 92, and that's a pretty good run. We had here in the Twin Cities a local sports writer that's pretty well-known nationally, but not a household name nationally, but among sports writers, this guy is known, and his name was Sid Hartman. He also died this past week, or last weekend or something. He was 100 years old, and he had a column printed in the paper, the Star Tribune, for which he had written columns for decades. He had a column the day it was announced that he died. I think it was last Sunday. I think that's when it happened. And I posted something on Facebook, and a Facebook friend said about Sid Hartman. He says, "Well, he outlived the warranty," and that we can say about James Randi. He outlived the warranty. So I thought I'd spend a little time talking about James Randi on the show, and hopefully that's okay. I can remember. Back in the earlier days of Z-Talk Radio, back 10 years ago, even before I started doing the show, James Randi, by a lot of the hosts of the Z-Talk shows at the time, you know, they kind of poo-pooed. They put their nose up at him. Oh, Randi. Well, that's because he just didn't accept their line of bullshit. Sorry, neither did I. But Randi was very... he was very public about it. Randi started his career in entertainment as a magician, or as he preferred to be called, a conjurer, and an escape artist. And he got to be pretty famous doing that. One of his big tricks that he had done was to get himself out of a straitjacket while being suspended, hanging upside down over Niagara Falls. Was something he did. And I think that he followed very much in the footsteps of one of his heroes in the field of magic and escape artistry, Harry Houdini, who is probably the world's most famous magician. He's like the Babe Ruth of magic. If you walk up to somebody who doesn't follow baseball, chances are pretty good if you ask them, name a baseball player, they'll come up with Babe Ruth. I mean, it might have been better a few years ago, but still, I think chances are pretty good they'll say Babe Ruth. If you walk up to somebody who doesn't really know much about magic, the world of magic and magicians and that kind of thing, ask them to name a world-famous magician, and chances are pretty good they'll say Harry Houdini. There might be others they might say, but I think Houdini is going to be, you know, a pretty safe bet that somebody would name him. And that's because he was, you know, he's synonymous with the world of magic and escape artistry. But also, Houdini at some point in his career, began to really be bothered by, at the time it was spiritualism and seances and spirit mediums and these people. And he was seeing what he saw, you know, being a magician, he could see tricks being done. And so he started on a crusade of exposing the fakes. And Randy did the same thing. He got to a point in his career, I believe I heard him say in one interview that, you know, his body wasn't able to do the escape stuff as well as it used to be. You know, we all get older. And he too was seeing the exploitation of the gullible, get their money, mainly. He began seeing that and thought there was something he needed to do to shine the light of skepticism on that. And he began to do very similar stuff to what Houdini had done. He started to explain these tricks that are done. Now, he would say that he couldn't say for certain that these were the same tricks that these people were doing, the ones he would show. But he said, I can produce the same effects that these people are doing, and I'm not tapping into the supernatural. I'm not tapping into the paranormal, some power outside of me. He says these are just tricks that he's learned and mastered as part of his being a magician or a conjurer. So I thought I'd go over some of his, a few of his big hits. I have just fairly recently talked about the Uri Geller moment that Randy had in his career. In fact, it was not just one moment. It was a long series of moments with Uri Geller. What we're learning in the biographies that have come about Randy, saying, you know, he didn't graduate high school, but he was, you know, considered a genius. He won the MacArthur Genius Grant. And Randy had said that much of the money that he got from that grant went to paying for legal fees with the many lawsuits that Uri Geller put against Randy, because Randy was out there saying, well, you know, I can bend spoons too, and I'm not saying I'm doing it with my mind. And so there was, I did talk about it, there was the big show, The Tonight Show, hosted by Johnny Carson. It was a friend of Randy's. Johnny Carson had Uri Geller on as a guest. Now, Johnny, who has a background in magic himself, or at least he did when he was alive, he saw some of the same kind of trickery. So he consulted with Randy. Says, what can we do to put some controls on this? What can we do? And Randy said, don't let Uri Geller or any of his people have any contact with the props that you're going to have him use to show his tricks. Avoid doing that. And that control just flummoxed Geller. He came out only when he walked on stage and saw the table set up with all those little things, all the little doodads of the tricks that he would do. And he did like half a dozen tricks. He made a career out of half a dozen tricks. And he failed utterly. But did that destroy his career as a 70s spoon-bending sensation? No. He got booked onto the Merv Griffin show. Merv Griffin didn't put the same kinds of controls in. And then, as I talked about earlier, either this month or late last month on this show, he ended up getting himself a guest appearance in a Marvel comic book, the Daredevil title, or Daredevil title. And I talked about that previously. So he didn't end Uri Geller, Randy, but he dinged him quite a bit. He even wrote a book about Uri Geller. The other hit to talk about, and I know I've talked about this on the show before, is the TV evangelist Peter Popoff. This was in the 80s. Peter Popoff was getting pretty popular in his ministry. He'd have all these people come into these big arena places, and he'd faith heal the sick. It was always, you know, something that you couldn't really see. I mean, if somebody was missing a leg, he didn't grow back a leg for them. He didn't miracle that out of them. What Popoff would do was he'd stand in front of this congregation and he'd start calling out people's names, full names, and their address, and he'd say, "You've got cancer of the stomach." He had a really annoying voice, shrill, grating voice, and he would, you know, he could be getting this information seemingly from God or angels or something. You know, something supernatural like that. At least that's what he wanted his congregation to believe. And the money would pour into him. According to Randy, the guy was making $4 million a year doing this. Not a bad chunk of money, even, you know, especially in the 1980s. So he's doing this. And, well, Randy started to investigate the guy. He had a team of people help him out. And they, I think at some point, somebody noticed he was wearing an earpiece. And they thought, is he getting radio signals? And so they started checking the frequencies, and lo and behold, they found the voice, not of God, but of Peter Popoff's wife, who was reading information off of cards that were filled out by the faithful before the events. So she'd read off their names, their addresses, what ailments they had, what their worries were, what they wanted God to help them with. And Popoff would, he'd just throw all this stuff out there, and he'd con them. At least that's what it seemed to be happening. You know, use Occam's razor. What do you think is really happening? He's getting the voices from beyond, or he's getting them from his wife. And so Randy exposed this on the Carson show, or the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, as well. This time, Randy was on the show to talk about the investigation. And it did ding Popoff pretty well. He did his ministries declared bankruptcy not long after that because he lost a lot of audience. But as Randy put it, Randy was the first person I heard to use this phrase, the unsinkable rubber duck. Like an unsinkable rubber duck, Popoff popped up again. This time he, you know, it was several years later, but this time he's on late night on television and doing these infomercials where he's not healing your illnesses, he's healing your financial difficulties. So you just send away for this spring water and give him lots and lots of money, and God will give you a lot of money. So, you know, he's still at it. He's just found a different tack. It's still a line of bullshit, and I'm sure he's making money again. There are other things. There's a couple other hits I'm going to talk about and a little bit else about Randy, but that's just going to have to wait until after I take my first break. So you're listening to Dimland Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim Dr. Jim Fitzsimmons. I shall return.
Hey, this is Danny Potts from the Kentucky Ghost Chasers, and you're listening to Z-Talk Radio.
Do you believe in ghosts? Do you think Bigfoot is real? Do you suspect that your neighbor is really Val Tor, leader of the lizard people of Bendar 3? Well, Dr. Dim doesn't, and he'll tell you why when you tune in to Dimland Radio Saturday nights, 11 Central, midnight Eastern on Z-Talk Radio Network. It's an hour of science promotion, pop culture rants, personal observation, and, of course, skepticism. Join Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons, Saturday nights, 11 Central, midnight Eastern, for Dimland Radio on Z-Talk Radio Network. Don't just take my word for it, but you are listening to Dimland Radio on Z-Talk Radio Network.
We're scanning up a good time on your favorite radio station.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Dimland Radio here on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. I'm talking about James Randi, who had died earlier this week at the age of 92. Let's see. I was talking about some of his greatest hits as far as his skeptical activism went. And, I mean, and he had a lot of great hits. But these, I picked four to give a closer look to. So we got two... probable con men that that Randi exposed to the world, or at least helped to expose to the world. Didn't necessarily stop them completely, but he had a hand in making the world realize what these guys were probably doing. But he did other things, such as there was this project called the Alpha Project. The Alpha Project was something that Randi put together in order to demonstrate to scientists that scientists can be fooled. They might think they're smart and educated, and that they understand you can't fool a scientist or something. They some of them had that certain amount of arrogance and not realizing that they could be fooled. And there were those, you know, psychologists and parapsychologists that were testing for psychic ability. And Randi saw an opportunity to try this project, an experiment of his own, to see what would happen. And so he ended up recruiting a couple young men. Steve Shaw later became known as Banachek, who was a magician, and Mike Edwards. And he gets these two young fellas to apply to, there was this university that was looking for psychics to go in and apply to be subjects of this of these testings, the study. And these kids were good at, you know, bending spoons and doing these tricks and all. They were good at this kind of stuff. They had skills. And Randi would help coach them along as this took place. And it took place over a long period of time, something like 2-3 years. And these kids were just amazing as far as the scientists were concerned. They just were, this is the real deal. These kids are just incredible. It's stupendous what they're seeing. And, they were even kind of being, you know, befriending the kids. The kids, I think, would have dinner over at the houses of some of these scientists that were studying them and all that. Well, it went on for quite some time. And, Randi did have a rule. I hope I'm right in this. I think he did tell the two of them, if the people testing you ever ask if you're doing tricks, if you're cheating, you have to be honest and say yes. And they never did ask. They just accepted on face value everything that the kids were doing. And believing that this was coming from some, you know, supernatural power, some paranormal abilities. Until eventually, Randi had a press conference, and the two young fellows are there with him, and he was asking these young fellows about how it was that they were doing these feats. What do you have to say? How were you able to do this? And did you have a method or something? And yes, we cheated, and it shocked them. And Randi did get in a little hot water for that because he was practicing deception. But he was, you know, he on that side, and these two kids, they were the con men. Because I think Randi was, they didn't realize there was a connection between the two kids and Randi. But Randi was working in an advisory capacity with these scientists, saying, you know, giving them advice on how to, you know, how to put in proper controls and stuff like that to keep the subjects from cheating. But so there was some pushback, even in the skeptical community. Some eyebrows were raised, thinking, "Is that the right way to go about it?" But he did expose the idea to these scientists that just because you're well educated, just because you're experts in a certain line of science or whatnot, doesn't mean you can't be fooled. And he demonstrated that they could be fooled. He also did a demonstration that the news media can be fooled. And that, you know, exposing a certain amount of gullibility on the side of the news media, or a laziness in their journalistic integrity. He showed, and this took place in Australia, and it was Carlos. Now, this happened, I think, in the 80s as well, as I think Project Alpha was in the 80s, late 70s into the 80s, and then Carlos was in the 80s. And that was a time period where channeling was the big deal. Channeling was the paranormal du jour. This was the getting a lot of attention. There was what's her name, Jay-Z Knight, who was channeling the spirit of some earth spirit named Ramtha, something like that. And it's just, you know, she just do some play acting, and she put on an accent and all this kind of crap. That the people channeling entities from ancient Greece, and they can't speak Greek, but they get an accent. They channel old French people from centuries past, but they don't speak French. You know, it's like, come on. Randy got involved with a performance artist named Jose Alvarez, who played this character Carlos. They came up with Carlos, and they did a little press conference PR package to send to news organizations in Australia. I believe one news organization was working with Randy to see what would happen. I think that's the how the story goes. But nevertheless, there was this huge push about this Carlos is coming to Australia, and they sold out some arena, and but they didn't make any money. They made sure that no money came to Randy or Carlos, I'll link to stuff on the show notes. Go to dimland.com. And check out the show notes, and it'll link to a bigger story or a more full, detailed story of all these things I'm telling you about. But this Carlos came to the attention. Randy hired Jose Alvarez and another fellow to play Carlos's manager. And so Jose would there was a bit of news footage. Interview where a reporter's talking to Jose Alvarez, who was saying that he could channel Carlos, and there was a nurse there to check, and there was something that Carlos could do would be to stop Jose's heart from beating. So the nurse is checking the pulse, and she felt and at some point, you know, Alvarez's pulse stops as he's seemingly going into a trance. He says, "Oh, there's no pulse. The pulse has stopped." And almost immediately, he would explode into Carlos. Very theatrical, very, you know, mannered in his movements and you know, and the way he would talk and all this kind of stuff. And there's a trick to stopping your pulse in your arm. You take a ping pong ball and you put it in your armpit and you squeeze your arm tight. And that will block off the artery to your arm, which will stop the pulse in your wrist. And so the nurse sees that, feels that go away, and she's, oh. And then, you know. And the news media in Australia gobbled it up until Randy had a news conference and exposed that this is all a hoax. And again, he got some pushback, as, hey, you're being deceptive and all that kind of stuff. He's putting on the con. But he also was demonstrating the gullibleness, the journalistic laziness of the news media when it comes to something like this. They always have this, you know, this, there's two tiers to the news media, it seems, that the, you know, when they report on politics and war and crime and that kind of stuff, it's very serious, and they dig into it, and they're very journalistic. But when they start, you know, this is the time of year, we're in the month of October, this is the time of year where, you know, you start seeing news stories about the most haunted place in the Twin Cities or wherever you live. You know, you start seeing that kind of crap, and it's just fluff reports where they take their journalistic integrity hats off and just say, oh, isn't that interesting? Oh, wow. Well, what do you think? Oh, isn't that interesting? You be the judge. Oh, wow. It's just, you know. So those are four things, and he's done a lot more things. He's written books, which, by the way, you should get Flim Flam. That's a book he's written, which is sort of a general overview of skepticism and chicanery and con artists and their methods and such. It's a really good book. You should have that. Every skeptic should have Flim Flam on their on their shelves. He's written other books about Nostradamus and Uri Geller and faith healers, and he's written articles for numerous magazines. He had a regular column in Skeptic magazine called Twas Brillig that he had done for quite a long time, and he's given talks. He's given a talk about homeopathy, or at least part of the talk was homeopathy. That's the medicine where the active ingredient has been diluted out of the medicine. They just keep mixing water in and water and water in until there's not a molecule of the active ingredient in the medicine. And then that means it's really powerful somehow. And he took a whole bottle. He would start his talk by downing a whole bottle of homeopathic sleeping pills, and he wouldn't even yawn. If you'd done that with actual sleeping pills, you end up in a hospital. So it's... That's stuff he's done. He's even been on an episode of Happy Days, which is kind of cringeworthy, but still, because I hate the show Happy Days. The first couple seasons, fine, but after that, it just went downhill real fast. Even before they jumped the shark, I couldn't stand it. It became the Fonzie show, and it's just, blech. But anyway, that's just me, though. And let's see, he's had a far-reaching influence on skeptics and others, and Penn Jillette. Of Penn and Teller, he tweeted after it was announced that Randy had died. He says it's quite simple. He just said, and he said this often on his podcast, that if there was no James Randi, there would be no Penn and Teller. It's just that simple. So now I've never got to meet the man, never did. I mentioned that he had the James Randi Educational Foundation, and they organized skeptical conventions. They were always out in Las Vegas, or almost always, and called the Amazing Meeting, or TAM, and I was never able to get out to them. But I have a friend who is a fellow skeptic. He went out 1 year. I think he's been to a couple of them, but he went out 1 year, and I think I might have told him before he went, says, hey, say hi to Randi for me. And I think that might have been the thing. And then I got in the mail from my friend, Chris. He sends this. It was an autographed picture of James Randi. Randi had autographed it to Jim Fitzsimmons, and in parentheses, Dr. Dim, James Randi. And it's great. I mean, for a moment, you know, James Randi, you know, I was somebody that became known to him, at least just for a moment. There's this guy that does this thing on the internet with a paranormal radio station where he's the skeptic and goes by Dr. Dim, something like that. I found that to be cool that I have that. And of course, I have to mention the $1 million prize. The James Randi Education Foundation had a $1 million prize to any person who could prove under test conditions their paranormal abilities. And both parties, the people doing the testing, the person making the challenge, you know, trying to get the money, both settled on what would be a fair test of their abilities. Both agreed to the test, and no one has ever won the $1 million prize. Started out, I think, as $1,000, and it grew until a generous donor gave $1 million. Here, make it $1 million. And so the JREF would have the interest from the $1 million to help run the organization. But the $1 million was there, and there were people that said, oh, it's probably not there. But Randi would show them the financial papers and say, it's there. You know, he'd show them his books. And, you know, unlike a certain president when it comes to tax returns. But nevertheless, he do that. And no one's ever been able to claim it. And then there were those that say, oh, well, it's rigged so that nobody can ever win it. Well, yeah, it's rigged so that nobody can cheat. If they have to cheat to win it, you know, they should be able to do what they say they can do. They should be able to do it under test conditions. If this thing was existed, they should be able to do it. But, no, it doesn't work that way, they say. Oh, well, too bad. So he's dead at 92. I mean, what a life. What a legacy. What an amazing man. All right, where am I at my time schedule here? Oh, I'm just in time for my next break. You are listening to Dimland Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim, Dr. Diffit Simmons. Come, just sit tight. I'll be back.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
I am living on Channel Z!
Hey y'all, this is Tangina. You're gonna give me whiplash looking up there too. I've cleaned many houses, and I don't know what it is that hovers over Dr. Dim's house, but it was strong enough to punch a hole into this world and take his wallet away from him. And I think what we might be dealing with is the beast. Hold on. Did you just say that Dr. Dim doesn't believe in poltergeists, tiny fortune tellers, or the beast? Well, holy sh! Why the didn't somebody tell me? Anyway, Dr. Dim's a skeptic. He'll be right back on ztalkradio.com. I still think this house is clean.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Flay of any snake in the cauldron, boil and bake. I have newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and howlet's wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like hell broth boil and bubble. This brew be ye only salvation from your favorite radio station.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Dimland Radio here in the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. Okay, since we're so close to Halloween, and I hate to break this news to you, I won't be doing a show Halloween weekend. I won't be doing a show next week. We're taking our son down to a college, I'm just not going to have time to do a show. So, he's getting to that age where we start looking at colleges. Anyway, so I figured let's spend the last segment of the show recommending some horror movies to you. There's a couple new ones, or newer ones, and one of the older ones, one of my all-time favorites. To recommend to you. I do have a bit of a problem with one of them, which I'll discuss. A couple problems with it. But doesn't mean it's not good. I'll discuss that when I get to it. Start with an old favorite of mine, and I know I've talked about it before on this show, and it is the 1973 film The Legend of Hell House. Just watched it again the other night. In fact, last night I watched it. And it is, it's creepy. It's atmospheric. It does the less is more kind of thing. You don't actually see too much happening. There's little effects happening here and there. You hear the voices of ghosts and that in there. But it's a story of four investigators that are hired to go to the what's called the Belasco House. It was owned by Emeric Belasco, some rich, eccentric rich dude that was into sexual deviancy. I guess the book it's based on, written by Richard Matheson, who also did the screenplay for the movie, is very sexual. I shouldn't say I guess, I know, because I've read it. It's toned down a bit for the film. It is a PG-rated film, so it's toned down quite a bit from what the book has, but there is that, you know, sexual aspect to it. And it's anyway, so these four investigators are sent to determine if there's life after death. There's two psychics, and a scientist, and the scientist's assistant, who happens to be his wife. And they investigate this scary house. And it's really cool. I remember watching it. It would be on TV in the afternoons back when I was a kid, and it just was creepy. It's creepy, and it's well done, and it stars Roddy McDowall as one of the psychics, and he does a terrific job. Gail Honeycutt plays the wife of the scientist, who's played by Clive Revell, and Pamela Franklin plays the other psychic that is employed in the house. And it's really atmospheric. It's got some cool electronic-type music for the score. And there's my favorite moment happens fairly early in the film. They've just arrived at the house. They have 4 or 5 days to determine this. And they go in there on December 20th, and they have till the 24th to complete their investigation. And when they get into the house, the psychic played by Pamela Franklin hears a voice, and she finds her way over to this old record player, and they play this record, and the record that you hear, there's a message on there from Emeric Belasco to people visiting his house, and I hope you find the answers you seek here. That's part of what he says. He's welcome to my house, and this was the voice she was hearing. And it's a great moment. It's really eerie. There's a reaction that Roddy McDowall has. There's an observation he points out I think is pretty cool. And it's always kind of, you know, given a nice chill when you watch that bit. It's just like, ew, yeah, think about that. So it's really good. It's 70s, so it has some 70s-ness to it. But it's still pretty good. It's not unlike an earlier film that came out, I guess, 10 years earlier, called The Haunting, which I'm trying to think of who the woman is that stars in that movie. I can't think of her name now. Julia Mills? Boy, I might be wrong there. Anyway, I've only seen that movie once, and that movie is pretty good, too. It does the less is more kind of stuff, it suggests the stuff that's going on without actually showing everything, which is good. I wish I could think of what her name is. Okay, that's that one. Also, just this past week, in fact, it was the first of a double feature of horror films that I watched. I watched The Legend of Hell House after it, is the movie Us, which came out in 2019. It is director, writer Jordan Peele's follow-up to the very successful Get Out, and I guess Us did pretty well too in the theaters, and I really liked it. It's hard to talk about exactly what this is, but it's a family of four, mom, dad, sister, brother. They're going out to their summer home, And the mother had an experience as a child, which we see at the beginning. In 1986, she had this experience where she went to an amusement park with her parents, and she got separated, you know, she wandered away from the parents, and ended up inside a hall of mirrors, and something she saw in there startled her, and she was a changed child after that moment. Once they found her, they show that she had, there was family therapy. The parents were trying to find out how to get their little girl back, and you know, there's something changed in her. Well, she grows up, marries a fellow, has a couple of kids, and they go to this summer house. And something starts to happen. there's one evening, their son, who's the youngest in the family, says there are people standing in the driveway, or standing outside the house. There are people, and so the dad, being a big fellow, looks out the door, and there's these four people standing at the end of the driveway. You can't really see them, but it's an adult, male and female, and kids, male and female. You just see them pretty much in silhouette, just standing in the driveway. It's pretty creepy. And then it goes from there. It's a fairly violent film. It steps up to the threshold of being pretty gory, but it doesn't really get too gory. There's the suggestions of stuff happening. It's quick. There's a rather jarring moment, a couple moments of violence that you see from an unexpected member of the family to display this kind of violence, which is a bit disturbing. But when you take in the whole movie of what's going on, kind of makes sense that would happen. My favorite part of it is that creepy moment of the family standing in the driveway. That's a great moment. It's just really creepy. But my favorite character in the movie is the dad, because he's such a dad. He's just a dad. He makes dad jokes. He's got the dad vibe going. This is a dad. And I really liked him. I thought he was great. His character's name is Gabe. And I thought he was pretty good. Now here's the other one. This was also released last year, 2019, in the before times, and it's called Midsommar. And it's a horror film in the vein of The Wicker Man, in that it's an isolated community that has some strange practices. And this community is in Sweden, and they're up close to the Arctic Circle. So in the middle of summer, they don't get much of night. The sun never quite goes down, and it's a commune that everybody lives communally. There's this place, the building in which they sleep is just this large building with beds. Two floors, and it's a big open atrium kind of feel to it, and there's no privacy. It's just there's the beds, and a lot of their time is spent outdoors, and what they're having a special celebration of rituals that takes place every 90 years, and we meet these four kids that are college students. Working on their theses, two of them are anthropologists, and they're very fascinated about this commune, and they go to school with this kid that's from there, from this commune, and he wants to invite them back. Come with me this summer to this. You'll love it. It'll be great. I'd love to have you guys come. So they all go. There's a tragic event that happens to this. There's a female. The lead character, her name is Dani. She has a tragedy happen to her that is pretty rough. And the actress, I guess her name is Florence Pugh? P-U-G-H. I don't know how you say it. Pug? Poog? Pugh? I don't know how you say it. I apologize. She's really good. And she has a boyfriend where their relationship is strained. She feels she's losing him. But because of this particular terribly tragic event that takes place, he did want to get out of the relationship, but he can't get out. And she ends up coming along with them to this on this trip. And you know, and they get there, and it's all, you know, peace and love, Swedish hippies, all this kind of thing. But stuff begins to happen. And yeah, there's some graphicness in this, and that you should be aware of, you know. And but otherwise, it's you see, I have a problem with it, though. I have a couple problems. One is there's a tree that is in the middle of this. It's just an open area. There's a few buildings, but most, at least during this celebration that they're doing, this once in 90 years celebration that they have, everybody's outside most of the time. There's some inside activities where they're cooking or baking or something like that, but otherwise it's they're outside. And one of the characters, one of the kids that goes there, he has to go pee. So he picks what turns out to be a sacred tree that's lying across the ground just in the middle of the commune. And he just goes up and pees there. And it's like, wait a minute, what are you doing? How dumb are you? How weird are you? Has it been demonstrated since you've been there that people just pee wherever they want? Don't they have an outhouse area? But that wasn't too bad. But the thing that when it was over, I was talking to my wife about it and our son, who had seen the movie before, said, there was something that really bugged me, and that was the first day of ritual in this place, where there's something is going to happen. One of the students, one of the outsiders, who is an anthropologist, is very focused and very intense in his studies of societies, and he wants to study this one. He seems to know what is going to happen the next day, but the way he reacts, it makes you think, at least made me think, it would go a different way than it did. Well, that first day's ritual, the first major ritual they do, involves two older members of the community. They're each 72 years old, and something happens, and I'm not going to give away what happens, but it's fairly shocking. And the outsiders who had brought in the camp, these four kids and there were two others that were brought in, are just of course shocked when they witness what happens. And you know, one of the people that brought the outsiders in is apologizing to the two other outsiders that aren't part of the main four, that they are particularly upset by it, and he apologizes for not warning them properly. And then there's the leader of this group of people, a woman named Siv, tries to explain this is a beautiful thing, this is something that, you know, that everybody was consenting, and this is something that, you know, is what we do. But the thing is, I'm trying not to give it away, but once these kids from the outside had witnessed this, if I put myself in this position, if I was among them, after witnessing what happens, I would be going to the kid that brought them there, the this wonderful Swedish fellow named Pell, who brought these kids there. I would have gone to him and said, "We're not leaving alive, are we? We're not. We're either staying here for the rest of our lives, or you guys are going to kill us." Because what we've just seen, you don't want to chance us going into the outside world and saying to the Swedish authorities, hey, we saw this, and they'll come and investigate. There's no way you're letting us leave alive. That was one thing that reaction didn't happen. They were shocked. They were stunned. And the two that weren't part of the main group, they were enraged. But the four were managed to, those two wanted to leave, but the four were managed to say, well, you know, they shrugged it off and they stuck around. I had a hard time with that one. Hopefully that won't bother you in the movie. It's really good. So check out Legend of Hell House and Us and Midsommar. They're all really good. And they're not perfect films, but they're all really good. I think I do have time to squeeze in, to just do a quick squeeze in of one of these.
And now it's time for a Dimland Radio Pedantic Moment.
Yeah, this ought to be good.
I do not like reality TV shows. And there's one main reason I don't like reality TV shows, and that's the, I've heard it called this, or I think it's called this, the confessional portions. I don't know if that's the actual term for it, but it's those constantly interrupting the, whatever the show is, whatever activities are taking place, to talk to one of the people, that person will talk to the camera about what they're thinking, how they're feeling, what's going on, how much they don't like this person, how terrible this is, and oh my, and it's just, it's, I can't stand that. It's the part, it's just, I almost watched a season of Celebrity Apprentice because Penn Jillette was on it and Adam Carolla was on it. And I was fans of both of theirs. They were talking about it on their respective podcasts, and I thought, well, this might be interesting. So I missed it when it was on the TV, but I went online, brought up the NBC website, and started watching it, and I got about 10 minutes in, and about three or four of those confessionals, and I realized, that's why I don't watch these shows. I don't like that. I don't care. I don't want, you know, it's just like, I don't want to hear it. So I don't watch them. Okay, that's why that's the main reason I don't. And I never did watch them until I met my wife. And my wife liked them. And I can't say that I didn't get drawn into some of these. Like the Amazing Race wasn't too bad as far as a reality TV show goes. Survivor had its moments of interest, but still, there was constant, oh, she was just so mean to me, and oh, he's such a jerk, and I'm ugh. Ugh. I'm gonna form an alliance with these two, and then what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna stab them in the back, and I'm gonna, you know, it's like, I don't care. It's just not for me. And Amy has gone back and forth on watching them and not watching them and watching them and watching them, not watching them. Well, she's gone back to watching Big Brother. Now, if you don't know what Big Brother is, they get about, I don't know, a dozen people, and they throw them into this house that's specially built as a big studio house. So there's cameras all over the place, and they have these people do activities so that somebody gets head of household, and then they can nominate two people to put on the block, and then the people decide whether they stay or go, and if they kick them out of the house, they get kicked out, and the last one remaining in the house wins $50 or whatever it is. And they're doing one of these during the age of COVID. So I'm certain that all the people, once they've auditioned and picked to who's going to go in there, these will be interesting people. Once they're all picked, I'm sure they're all tested for the COVID. If anybody tests positive, you're out of here. But, you know, I'm sure they're all tested. They test negative. They throw them into the house, and they're quarantined within this house. They don't leave. They're in there. And I'm sure they may even do testing periodically while they're still all in the house, just to make sure everybody's safe. But they are quarantined from the world. The host of the show, a woman named Julie Chen, she's free to be out in the outside world. She's out there. Now, hopefully she's doing social distancing, wearing masks, washing her hands, being careful, and I'm sure she's being tested too. So, but she hosts the show. And so whenever anybody gets kicked out of the house, you know, they walk out of the house and right into the interview, the big interview studio with Julie Chen. Now, they have the distancing going on. They're seated well apart from each other. But the people that are kicked out of the house, before they walk out, they put on a mask. And they walk out and they sit down and they talk with Julie Chen, who is not wearing a mask. We wear the mask to protect others. sure, it protects us a little bit, but we wear the mask to keep the virus that might be inside of us from going out and getting into someone else. Well, these people have been tested before they went in. They've been quarantined inside this house for weeks. Why are they putting on the mask and Julie's not putting it on? When you get an answer for that, let me know. I think it's probably because of, you know, well, we don't want to cover up Julie Chen's face. She's the host of the show, right?
Good night, Herr Doctor.
Good night, Frau Blücher.
Well, as I always say, be skeptical and extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Please be patient. Wash your hands, social distance, wear a mask, stay home, stay safe. You've been listening to Dimland Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com, and I'm your host. This is saying happy Halloween, and remember to sleep with the lights off.
You can check out my show notes at dimland.com. Just click on the blog option, and you can email your questions and comments to drdim@dimland.com. That's drdim@dimland.com. And the opening theme song, Ram, is by Theolius and is used with permission.
This has been a production of the ZTalk Radio Network.
And now, a message to our competitors.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning us in.
What did you think of tonight's installment of Dimland Radio?
Well,
I'm going to hell.